And so I went to the school chaplain after the experience and I said, look, you know, that I had a mixed experience of that whole thing. The first half was amazing. I actually had tons of fun. I think the students did too. The second half was a total bomb. And I said, what if next year we try to do a graduation liturgy of the word? And we can make it fun and engaging. And again, I'll bring my A game, and we'll have music and everything else. And it'll be a chance to share the good news with people. And then they can go on to the reception, where it might even be a little bit shorter, you know? That could be attractive to people. And she said, no, we have to have a grad mass. I said, well, why? Because we've always had a grad mass. Okay? That's not exactly a winning argument with me. Okay, so we've always had a grad mass. Now, tell me, what percentage of your students go to church on Sunday? And she said, probably about 3%, which is what I had observed. And I said, okay, so why do we need to have a grad mass? We've always done it that way. And they need to have mass. They'll want to have communion. And I said, well, you do realize we're here every single Sunday. You can tell them. In fact, we're here every single day. You can come every day of the year if you want to go to mass. Why do we have to merge these two together when it doesn't seem like it's quite meeting the need of the people who are coming? We want to recognize that, you know, there's baby steps, and some people, if they're not aware, or even don't have a preliminary understanding of the mass, it's just going to go right over their head, and it's going to feel like a long, boring experience. Okay. And so that's really, coming back to funerals, that's really the primary reason for all this. We recognize, about 90% of baptized Catholics in our part of the world do not go to Mass on Sunday. That's a fact. Okay? 90%. That means only 10% do. So what percentage of people who are approaching us for funerals, not to mention their families and their friends, what percentage of them will be familiar with Catholic liturgy and know how to pray and enter in, and what percentage will be bored and disconnected and confused and, you know, feeling like the life is being sucked out of them, right? So this is our context, and we want to say, how do we meet people in a way that's meaningful and truly loving? That's what we're trying to do. I had a quote here, which you've probably seen before. Oh, here's another picture of a funeral home. I just like that because that one hearse on the side, it reminded me of the Ghostbusters car. So I was trying to include that in my presentation somehow. I couldn't figure out how, but there you go, random picture. And here, you've probably seen this in the Benedictus before. This is from the Catechism, paragraph 1072. Can you see this over here? Okay. The sacred liturgy does not exhaust the entire activity of the church. So the Mass does not exhaust the entire activity of the church, meaning there's so much more to what we do as a church. And if we default only to say, well, we don't know what to do, we'll do Mass, that's not the approach the church is suggesting. It, meaning the Mass, must be preceded by evangelization, faith, and conversion. It can then produce its fruit in the lives of the faithful, new life in the Spirit, involvement in the mission of the church, and service to her unity. So the Catechism itself is recognizing, hey, there's a lot of things that should precede Mass. And so we're trying to be attentive to that. Okay. I thought what I'd do, figured maybe it'd be a little bit more fun. I came up with a list of misconceptions around why we're making these changes to funerals. And the lion's share of it, by the way, is concerning funerals, and then a couple at the end concerning Mass intentions. And so, are you guys okay if I go on for a bit longer? I got about a dozen misconceptions. I think some of them will be interesting. And then we're going to... What does that mean?
Yeah, let's hunt it down and give us a chance.
Sure, yeah, okay. We're here. We can stay until 12, and if you want to stay that longer, and so we're going to go through these because these might answer some of your questions, and then you can ask your questions. Yeah. So misconception number one: there won't be any more funeral masses at St. Benedict's. That is not true. What we're saying is the norm is when people call. Especially people who have no contact with us, they call up the office. We're saying the norm is that we have funeral liturgies of the word, and then when appropriate, we'll have a funeral mass. And generally, it's appropriate when, as the Archbishop himself has said, when a significant portion, whatever, define that in whatever way, it's loose, but a significant portion in attendance will be practicing, will be aware of Catholic liturgy. And the irony is this. Most, if not every single person in this room, just by nature of the fact that you're here and you care and you even were aware that there was a workshop happening, you're connected enough to this parish that very likely all of you will have funeral masses. You want to all go home now? Now, why? Because presumably, if you've made any effort to connect with this parish, then there's people in this room who know you. I hope that you know at least one other person in this room, and maybe several. And if some of those people will be wanting to attend your funeral, well, of course, you'll know what to do at Mass. You'll know how to pray at Mass. So that's the irony is that this change will impact all the people who are not in the room, right? Because all the people who are disconnected from church, they're the ones who the norm will be for them to have a liturgy of the word. Okay, misconception number two. You will have to merit a funeral mass. So we got an email about this. Somebody saying, you know, what do I have to do to earn, you know, the right amount of points so that I can guarantee myself a funeral mass? Again, this is not where we're going with this. Because if you think that I'm going to be, you know, kind of checking boxes off to say, you know, how many years have you been in the parish? What's the ministry you've done? What's proved to me that you deserve a funeral mass? Because no, that's not what this. This is a pastoral approach to say, how can we meet people in a way that's meaningful. Let's remember, the three goals of funerals are to, one, to pray for the deceased, number two, to honor their body, and three, to care for the living. And part of this, number three, caring for the living, is to say, hey, if they have no connection at all, let's not make them sit through something that will be totally confusing and difficult for them. Now, again, I say, you don't have to prove yourself by demonstrating I've earned a funeral mass because of all these things. But at the same time, I would say, I would like for every single person in this room and in our parish to get connected. To go beyond, if you're coming to Mass and that's the exclusive practice of your faith, I would invite you to get more connected. Get in a ministry, take Alpha, join a small group of some kind, where you can continue to grow. And if you have not yet done that, I lovingly and gently put the question back to you. Why not? What's holding you back? I would love for all of us, because when you do that, your faith becomes that much richer. It's that much better, and our experience of parish is that much greater. Okay, number three. Misconception number three. The priests are lazy and don't like funerals. Been accused of a lot of things, not lazy. If you think I'm lazy, well, you know, that's your issue. I have a lot of other vices, but not laziness. I probably swing in the other direction. But as far as funerals, I actually think for my own priesthood, it's important that periodically I anoint the sick, I celebrate funerals, because it grounds me. Both as a priest, it's meaningful, it's important, part of my ministry that reminds me that, oh yeah, I have been called to serve, and B, my time is not long for this world, right? And I need to be reminded of that periodically. Now, that being said, six funerals in a week is a lot. And I know of a situation, a priest ordained at the same time as me, we were chatting 4 years in, I had done, I don't know, a couple dozen funerals or something. Half of that time I'd spent on campus, right, so I didn't do any funerals during that time. But 4 years in, you know how many funerals he had done? 200. Right? Over 200 funerals. Like working and ministering closely with people who are grieving and burdened, and he was working in this diocese, by the way. We're human too. I just don't have the capacity, physically, mentally, emotionally, to be a funeral machine all the time. But there are priests in our diocese currently who that's their practice. Pretty much almost every day of the week, they're doing a funeral, several a week. It very well could be part of it. Yeah. So, number three, misconception number four, sorry. A liturgy of the word can only take place at a funeral home. Now, this was an interesting one because I didn't even think of this, but some people thought, oh, that means we have to go to Snow's or wherever else. Where I love this place, Monet Funeral Home or Money Funeral Home. To be honest with you, some of us can't afford to die these days. It's so expensive. But Dinah, would you come up for a minute? I thought I'd get Dinah to speak for a minute to explain, because I just realized many of you might not even know what do we mean by a liturgy of the word.
Sure. Is it Catholic? It is definitely Catholic. The word liturgy basically means the work of the people. And so we talk about the Mass as a liturgy, and it says that we participate, we're part of what's going on. And we talk of the Mass as divided into two parts, the liturgy of the Word and the liturgy of the Eucharist. But we have other services that are more focused on the Word, evening prayer or morning prayer. And sometimes we have a liturgy of the Word when it's Father Simon's day off, someone's not around, and I might do a liturgy of the word service. And sometimes I've done that for funerals. And we still do a beautiful service, a liturgy. We have hymns, we have the opening prayer, we have the readings, we have a reflection, we have the prayers of the faithful, we have the final commendation. So all those parts of the funeral are still going to be there. We're still paying a respect to the person who has died, honoring that person, praying for that person, respecting the person's body, and it can be a coffin or it can be an urn. And we still do what we can to speak to the family and to comfort them and to pray with them. One funeral that actually Deacon David did recently was a woman whose children were from her first marriage and they weren't Catholic. And so having a liturgy of the word was really respectful to them, because that's something we share with people from other churches that focus on the word. And so they were able to be fed, to be nourished, to be consoled by those readings, the reflections, the prayers that we were able to share together. And they would not have been able to fully enter into the Eucharist. And so we were being very pastoral, very welcoming, very supportive of them. And so that's what we're aiming to do when we have a liturgy of the word.
Awesome. Thank you, Dinah. I think one of the... Dinah came up with a definition of a liturgy of the word, kind of a soundbite, and something along the lines of it's a beautiful service that we offer to help the family pray during this time of grieving at the loss of their loved one. Something along the, you said it way better than me, but anyways, number five, misconception number five. Aren't there a lot of unchurched people at weddings that we still have masses for them? This, again, was emailed into us. Great question. And it's true. At weddings, very often, the wedding party, friends, family, come from away and have no church context or liturgical background or whatever. The Mass is foreign to them. Well, the norm at St. Benedict for some years now is that we have wedding liturgies of the word. Believe it or not, if somebody calls, Deacon David is the point person for weddings. That's the norm. Now, if they're practicing, if they're active in our parish, of course we'll have a wedding mass. But the norm is that we have a liturgy of the word. And so, again, this is a way in which we're trying to be consistent to reach people in a way that's meaningful for them. Okay, number six. We're trying to punish people for not being engaged in their faith. So I think all of I've heard some language around, you know, we're denying people or we're punishing people or things like that. And I think that's the wrong starting point. I think that's unfair, to be honest with you. We are trying to love people. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, he's talking about people being infants early on in the faith. And he said, I fed you with milk, not with solid food, for you were not ready for it. Any mothers in the room? Yeah, right? You weren't ready for it. So we started you off with milk. That's kind of like what a liturgy of the word is. It's not a punishment. It's actually, we're trying to nourish people in a way that they will be able to be nourished. Okay, number seven. The only way to get a priest is to have a funeral mass. So, you know, if you're really... I don't like Dinah. I don't like Deacon David. I don't think anybody would ever say that, by the way. But let's say there was somebody... I've never met anybody who doesn't like Dinah or Deacon David, to be honest with you. But, you know, I really want to have a priest. Well, actually, I am grateful for them because they've helped out. But there's going to be a rotation, and priests will be celebrating liturgies of the word as well. In fact, going back to the wedding liturgy of the word, this past Saturday, there were two weddings. There were both liturgies of the word, and Father James did one, and I did the other. So you want to get a priest? That's kind of irrelevant. So we're gonna definitely take our turn. Misconception number eight. No one would freely choose to have a funeral liturgy of the word. Okay. There was a parishioner a couple months ago who lost her husband, and you know, I recognized her. She's involved in our parish and stuff. And I asked her, you know, if they begun the planning, and she said, yeah, we're gonna do a funeral liturgy of the word. And I was pleasantly surprised, and I thought, well, why? And she said, well, my family, none of them go to church. In fact, one of the in-laws is Muslim, and I think it would be easier for them to kind of come and pray, but just not with a mass. And I said, great. Well, we can certainly do that. There's another lady who I won't say her name, but you all know her, and she's a daily mass. She said to me this morning, I'm not even going to go downstairs for that thing. I said, oh, why? Because I'm totally bought into what you're doing. I said, really? Yeah. She said, you know, I want to have a funeral liturgy of the word because none of my family is practicing, and they would feel obliged to show up at a funeral mass that, again, would be difficult for them. So actually, there's some people who would prefer this option. Okay, number nine. The mass will not be offered for your loved ones. This, again, I cannot say it more emphatically. This is not true. We will guarantee that mass will be offered for every single person who dies from this parish. Guaranteed. Now, it might not be connected directly with the funeral rites, but whether people like it or not, we're going to offer mass for them. Okay? And the mass is powerful. The sacrifice of the mass is meaningful, and so we're going to do that. So, in the previous example I gave the lady who, it was a Sunday morning, she came up to me and said, my husband is dying, I think, within a couple of hours, maybe even this evening, he will have died. But we'd like to have a funeral liturgy of the word. It just so happened that I was celebrating mass that evening, and I said, you know what? I will offer mass tonight for your husband. I don't have a mass intention, or I had one, but I had the freedom to choose and adjust, so whatever I had planned to offer it for, I moved it to the next day. and I offered that just, again, privately in my heart, but I offered Mass for the repose of the soul for that man, whether he had died or was in the process of dying. And it was very meaningful for her. And again, we're getting to the next topic, but I had the flexibility to do that. Okay, number 10. A liturgy of the word is second class and shows less compassion for people. I might call upon our good deacon to come on up and just share, because he, as well as Diana, have been more directly involved with liturgies of the word. I'd like you to share, Deacon David, what's been some of your feedback from people? Like, do they feel kind of they got shortchanged?
I hope not. The number of liturgy of the words that I've done for funerals, I think, have been very powerful for people, have been very powerful for the friends and family of the deceased. I just want to back up a little bit, because it all starts with a phone call to Darlene or the parish office. And from that moment, that connection and contact, I would certainly hope that the families and the loved ones feel nothing but compassion and love for the deceased. And then once Darlene takes the information and passes it on to Sheila and her funeral team, the St. Benedict, as you all know, the St. Benedict system, for lack of a better word, is full of love and compassion and just the beauty of what it is to belong to this parish. And I think everyone senses it once they make initial contact to Darlene or whoever happens to answer the phone, if Teresa or Don are manning the phones that particular day. So by the time I meet with the family, be it at the funeral home for the vigil prayers or the morning of the funeral, a lot of the hard work is done. So really their sense of gratitude is expressed very clearly to me. So it's not necessarily the presiders, be it Dinah or priest or myself. It's a St. Benedict effort. And that's a very, very good thing and a very fortunate thing for us as a parish. So I wanted to relay that. But, I mean, and honestly, all of the feedback that I've ever had from a liturgy of the word, be it a wedding or be it a funeral, is always very gracious and one of gratitude and love in return. So we are humbled only by the reception and the feedback that we get from the family and the loved ones of the deceased. So, and I must also say, and I think it's more of a generational issue, but, and obviously it's evident to you, the difference between a funeral and a wedding. We really do want to place people in a comfort zone where we can be as loving and gracious and compassionate as we can. So a wedding is a younger generation who, when we say, well, it's going to be a liturgy of the word, we're going to kind of take out the Eucharistic aspect of it, and they say, okay, great. Right? Okay. It doesn't mean a great deal to them. I know it means a lot more to you. But we want to meet people where they are. I mean, we've seen it on the screen many times. We want to be pastoral. In order to be pastoral, we need to be able to listen to what their needs and wants are. So if we can put them at ease, we talk about, you know, Catholic calisthenics. It's not up and down, kneel, stand, sit, kneel. It's none of that. Can we meet the people where they are? And that's important.
Thank you, Deacon David. Great. So, yeah, again, I asked him this morning, I said, Deacon David, how many people were mad at you or felt, you know, put off or whatever because they were stuck with you? And he said, none. None. Right? Everybody. The guy's so beautiful and loving. I mean, and I would add, I asked Sheila if she would speak, but she didn't want to, and it's her birthday, so I let her off the hook. But Sheila and her team are another step of this compassion loop that's amazing. They show so much love to the families. We've received countless cards from people saying, thank you, St. Benedict Parish, for the way that you've cared for us through this difficult time. Okay, we're going to shift gears quickly. Last two, just concerning the mass intentions. So again, in June, Father James wrote a big piece on mass intentions, which I think is very clear and very good in the Benedictus. But one of the misconceptions, a mass is only of value if it's public and it's announced. Now again, the mass is the mass. When we come to mass, we actually step outside of space and time. So whether or not it's verbally announced or whatever, we are entering into this offering of Jesus himself to the Father in the Holy Spirit. It's Calvary. It's even before this, the Last Supper. It's Resurrection Sunday. It's all of these moments. It's not that we have several masses. There is one mass. And every time we come to attend mass, we're stepping into that one great mass. Now, when it comes to the offerings, we can offer mass intentions. And in fact, every single one of you, if you came to mass this morning, how many people had a mass intention? I hope that all of you come to mass every single time with your own intention. And as a priest, I certainly do. But the mass, like, there's an infinite amount of grace in the mass. And so it's hard to quantify to say, again, it can be meaningful to say I had 10 masses offered, but it's like, okay, 10 times infinity. Well, right? And so whether or not it's public or not, I mean, practically speaking, there's the whole piece of messing up names or getting the day wrong or something. Today, Len came up to me. Did I mess up that name anyways, Len? I did okay. Len gave me the heads up before mass how to pronounce the name, and I would have messed it up if he hadn't. But we had this experience, a while ago. Somebody came, and I don't remember the situation, but wanted to have mass offered on a particular day for a particular intention, and the day was booked already or unavailable or whatever. And they were disappointed, and they said, "Well, fine, I'm going to offer mass myself on that day." And it was like, great. That's actually what we want you to do. We want all of you to offer, come with an intention, right? And so just because it's not announced on the weekends already, we don't announce any of the masses. And so every single time I celebrate mass, you better believe I'm offering it for something. I have an intention, whether it's verbalized or not. And there's other parishes in this diocese that have already, they're way ahead of us in this. They don't have any announced masses at all in their parishes. Okay, number 12 is our last one. You can no longer get mass intention cards at St. Benedict's. And again, I don't know where this came from. But, Darlene, how many masses do we have typically in a month, let's say? 70 and 100 requests. And how many days in a month? Okay. 30 or 31, and subtract the weekends. I don't know, maybe that's 20 weekdays. So you can see if there's 100 requests coming in for mass intentions, we're barely getting the 20% of them, right, that we can offer right here. So already we have this practical situation where we're limited. However, there's all kinds of unannounced masses, and sometimes Darlene will what do you do when there's extra? What do you do with the other 80?
So with the excess, we are happy to be able to offer them to the diocese, and they have a lot of retired priests who are only too happy to be able to offer those mass intentions when they are saying mass. Obviously, we don't have enough days in the month to be able to accommodate all of the requests that we get. And as you may have noticed in the past, and we still continue to do this, special intention masses, we don't announce the name of the person whose special intention we're praying for, and that is simply to acknowledge their privacy. It's different when we're praying for a deceased person. Everyone knows they're deceased, but perhaps we're praying for someone whose illness or state of life right now require. We'd like to pray for them, but we don't verbalize those.
actually, Darlene, will we still have cards available? Yes, okay, good. So that was a major concern. There won't be any more cards. We will still have cards. You can still come and have a Mass offered. It will be unannounced, meaning it won't be publicly announced, but you can get a card. And what I've found is very beautiful. My own mom does this all the time. She kind of takes advantage of it because she has a son who's a priest. But she'll get a Mass card. And, just the other day, she said, hey, somebody in our family passed away. Would you offer a Mass for them? Sure. Okay. So I told her, look, Mom, I cannot guarantee you a day. I don't even know if it's going to be this month or when, but I will. And the Mass is outside of space and time. Right? So if it isn't on a particular day, God can handle that. Right? And so, but what she'll do is she'll always take a card and just write a beautiful note to the person she's giving it to, saying, you know, we're praying for you and we ask to have this Mass offered because we believe that there's a power to the Mass. And she'll give it to the person without any guarantee of it's going to be on this day at this time or whatever.